afternoon, everybody. Welcome into the Winklerverse. And welcome all of the people that are Bart Winkler Show listeners that have stumbled upon this as my show is slowly morphing into an infomercial for this show. Grant Bills alongside.
Hello.
You hear him on the what network?
Oh, the Wisco Sports Zone Network. Not important.
Well, I didn't want
to my show.
I didn't want to say the wrong network.
I appreciate that.
Anyway, it's Grant. Paul Imig. Somebody had asked me in one of the comments, who is mm-hmm? Because Paul doesn't put his name in the video.
Yeah, we got to figure out names. I have my handle. Bart has his full government name, and Paul has nothing.
Paul has mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And now he's disappeared. On the Dan Shaney YouTube stream. The Dan Shaney YouTube stream. I was just talking to Q, who is a Dan Shaney customer.
As am I.
And yes, you. Then Dan just sent Q a gift card to Amazon.
Hmm.
And Q's like, why did I get this? Maybe it's because I brought up Dan Shaney on your podcast. And I was like, then I would be getting that.
You right? would hope.
Then good. I would be getting that. All right. So I don't know where the fuck Paul is or what he's doing, but that's par for the course. Grant Bills, Paul Imig, good to be with you. You had asked me off the air if it was going to be me and Paul talking about Matt LaFleur for an hour.
I did ask you that.
Yeah. It will not be that. For those of you tuning in as well, this is not going to be a Matt LaFleur bitch-a-thon, even though the reels that I post get very strong engagement. Very strong. And Facebook does a much better job because YouTube, you put up a reel and it's like, okay, if nobody likes this in an hour and a half, we're basically torching it from the site. But Facebook, there's stuff that we talked about 2 months ago that's getting back into the algorithm. And so I appreciate Mark Zuckerberg. Before Paul gets back, if that ever happens, when did you first get on Facebook?
Me?
What was Facebook? Yeah, what was Facebook like for you? Hi, Paul.
I was in seventh grade, I believe.
And Facebook had been established or it was still coming out?
It was 2010, I think. So it had been out, like our babysitter had it, and there were games on there. That's all.
Because when I got it, I was in college, and at the time, it was only for in-college people.
It was the Facebook when you joined,
probably. It was thefacebook.com, and
three
you
words.
Had to have a college email to apply. And my one buddy never wanted to be on it, still never has to this day. So he gave his email to another friend we had that was not in school. And that's how he got on thefacebook.com. But it really was like, hey, who's going to 1505 Vine tonight? Or 1635 or whatever. I got to get the numbers right. And now I post shit memes to try to get $15. We've come a long way.
We have come a long way.
Anyway, like the show on Facebook.
By the way, I wasn't a Facebooker, but I did get an invite, a very early invite to Gmail when Gmail was like a handful of people got to hand out 10 invites or whatever it was. I was very, very early as a Gmailer, but never a Facebooker.
I just gave out my email to someone today, the electric company, but I told them my email. And I said, add Gmail. And I thought, remember when Gmail was like, if you have a Yahoo, you're a fucking scrub.
Well, Hotmail.
If you have a Hotmail, you might as well be dead. But Gmail is the professional email.
Mm-hmm.
Gmail? Google. I don't have more of the bit. I got to craft that before I take that to the stage. But I'm working on that. I've scribbled that one in my notebook.
Hotmail was the most mocked. I feel.
I was sexy Medusa 15 at hotmail.com.
What? Did you create that or did they give that to you?
No, for a while I was calling myself sexy Medusa. This was in like eighth grade.
What I mean, to reference what?
I don't know. I just had heard it and I put it on like my Snood account and all this other shit.
Your what?
Snood was a game where you shoot things at things.
We're the same age. I don't know what Snood is.
I had a Snood shirt.
I've never even heard of this.
He's going to share his screen.
I am.
I don't know any of these things. I had Yik Yak, Snapchat.
Yeah. Heard of Snapchat. I've never heard of Yik Yak.
Yik Yak was awesome. It might still be around, but I don't.
What does one do on a Yik Yak?
It's like anonymous posting, but it's location-based. So like it's a message board for people within like, I don't know, how many miles of where you are.
I think the biggest thing is, Bart pulls this up, that you'll miss, that you'll never get to experience is the true beauty of AIM, Grant, in its heyday.
Mm.
And the away messages. AIM. I said AIM. Bart, you probably
putting lyrics. Oh, well, I called it AOL. Called it AIM.
Or AI. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. This is Snood, by the way. It's just like a shoot game.
I don't know this.
Oh, I used to play this for hours in my dorm and not have sex. All right.
Brandon Woodruff accepted the qualifying offer. He'll be back.
He did?
Wow. Per Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic and Fox.
Okay.
He's coming back for what, 20 mil?
22, right?
I believe so, yes, 22.
I guess.
So for everyone, again, who comes to this pod for their breaking news, you now have it.
You broke the news to me, Grant.
One possibility for Brewers to sign Woodruff to a multi-year deal at a lower AAV. Interesting. All right, just something to mention. Sorry, I didn't want to derail the show.
No, I do have a thought on that because it's a one-year qualifying offer. Mm-hmm. So he's under contract for a year.
It sounds like what Grant is saying from Rosenthal's reporting, that they could then say, hey, now that we've got you for one, how about three for 60?
Okay, because I wonder, I mean, is this lockout as set in stone as I think it is?
I don't want to sign any contracts that are going to roll through the. I don't want any money on the books if we're not going to have baseball.
That's why I'm a team. If you're a team, right?
Or a fan, because I want my team to have money. Like the Angels signed a manager for 1 year. It's like, well, I don't want to pay a manager during the lockout if we don't have to.
Yeah, that's why I think there's going to be a lot of guys that sign on like March 28th.
But they're not going to get paid if there's a lockout.
I don't know, Paul.
No, they're not.
Would be correct. Players, managers, would managers though?
Well, I don't think so.
So well, are you going to see teams sign? I think you're going to see a lot of teams try to push 1 year deals because even still, they don't know what's going to. I mean, I'm sure a lot of stuff would get grandfathered in. I don't think a salary cap is coming.
No.
But I do think there will be some like dumb middle ground.
Yeah, Grant, I don't think if the manager's not part of the players' union, which they're not.
I don't know. Right.
Then if I don't think they are. But
that's
either way, then
the council took it upon himself to advance the
Tim
manager agenda.
Fact check. Tim, not your specialty. I know you're more just used to cutting dumb things, but yeah.
Okay.
Well, good news. But I do think Grant, that makes Brewers insider Grant Bills. Woodruff coming back does have a direct impact on whether Peralta comes back. Mm-hmm. Or mm-mm.
Ooh.
Brandon Woodruff taking this offer makes it less likely Freddy Peralta is also back. Mm-hmm. Or mm-mm.
I mean, probably. It's not going to make it more likely.
I think it lessens. I mean, I think the reason, the logic of it would be, okay, you get the... Because Peralta just has 2026 left on his deal, right?
Yes.
So then you get the mm-hmm. value for Peralta while also not extending a pitcher into his 30s, which, again, if you're the top five richest teams in baseball, you can pay pitchers in their 30s. If you're not, paying a pitcher in their 30s is not usually the best resource for your money, just like giving an offensive lineman a third contract is not good for your money.
David Stearns, in his infinite wisdom, did it with Frankie Montas. They're going to DFA him, so another massive big brain move for David Stearns today.
They're getting hot in here with all this warm hot stove talk. It's like warming me up today.
I have a
it's heating me up a little because it's cold. And the hot stove conversation, we're warming you up with it.
Let me test a theory on you guys impromptu. So Bart, let's what you guys both actually, because Grant, when did you first see Arrested Development? Like what, I mean, it came out in like what, 2001 to 2003 originally, right?
I don't know. It was one of my Pandy shows. So 2020, I watched that in Community during the pandemic.
One of your Pandy shows. I was like, yes. Okay, I get it. So I say that to say, so like there's some shows where having the structure of we have 21 minutes and we have to go like, you know, seven commercials can be really beneficial, right?
This show could use it.
you're not wrong. So there's like the structure, and some people thrive under like the structure of a show like that. Then Arrested Development comes back and they're on Netflix and it's like, I don't know, it could be 28 minutes, it can be 37 minutes, like I don't know, just fucking do what you want. And then you have a bunch of stuff that clearly should have been on the cutting room floor. Here's my parallel to that. I think there's a lot of times where having a tight payroll like David Stearns did in Milwaukee makes you better than having an infinite payroll like he does with the Mets. You're forced to just really fine tune and look and like, nah, I guess I don't really need that. And when you start to say, I don't know, it can be 37 minutes, do whatever you want. It can be $400 million for a player. We don't really care. I think it's the parameter and the structure then overrides the strategic mind that you would have to have applied with less money. Now, you can be the Dodgers and you can have a brilliant guy and an infinite payroll. And then that's when you have the situation that we're in. But anyway, I've thought that for a while.
You're just taking different risk. Like you're taking risk financially. You're also taking risk on like a guy who sucks.
But then it makes you look worse. So like would David Stearns, Brewers GM, have even looked at Montas in that situation? It just wouldn't have been a thought. So instead but then it makes Stearns look bad, right? For example,
he would have signed Chichi Gonzalez and then went upstairs to scratch his ass. That's what he would have done. That's what he did do, quite literally.
Sorry, I had a real masculine urge to cross my legs.
Continue, Paul. Sorry.
I mean, the interjections are sometimes really valuable, and this one was on that list for sure. Don't pan down.
I have one leg on top of the other. I'm not like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like elbow.
That's the end of my theory. But
well, I've got something to say.
I find shows often to be better under the structure, and I find sports general managers to often be better under constraints.
Because yeah, I think 3-hour podcasts, make it four. Like I think all shows should just be
longer. I like when people watch games on the internet with you.
Bart, here's another parallel for it. Raw, WWE Raw, is better as 2 hours than 3 hours. Why? Because they got to cut out an hour of shit that they otherwise would have put on for 3 hours.
But SmackDown's going back an hour again, and now people are saying it's going to give more time to the underused.
I think it'll make you get...
And was Blood and Guts not just a 3-hour show, Paul?
It was 225?
Okay.
So Blood and Guts ruled. And they do it sparingly.
Okay. If everything's shocking, nothing is shocking, but that's fine.
Is that your opinion of Blood and Guts?
That's my opinion of AEW.
Too much shock value. And therefore no shock value.
Right.
All I know is I'm thoroughly entertained by these wonderfully crazy people who are putting a lot of...
I follow it. All right. So regarding the show thing, just a quick note. I've been watching Law & Order Organized Crime, the Elliot Stabler vehicle. Because my wife and I watch SVU, and then I watch Organized Crime because it's got like a 24 vibe to me without the time hook. But she watches Law & Order, and we both watch SVU.
It's important to have your own things.
But in Organized Crime, it was on NBC for 4 years. And then I was watching it on Peacock because the fifth season was on Peacock. And all of a sudden, Stabler's like, well, what the fuck does that mean? And I'm like, what? This is a guy who hasn't sworn, and they swear now on Peacock. So it's like, and it makes more sense because these guys, I mean, there's murders happening all the time. And on network TV, it's like, oh man, that is a terrible thing that occurred. Instead of real life, you'd be like, where the fuck are this guy's brains? So it's more realistic, but it also threw me off.
Don't you think though it does build up? So like, for example, do you remember, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago when South Park did the whole countdown because at the end they were going to say...
They were going to say shit one time.
And then didn't they say it like 200 times?
200 sometimes.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's South Park at their...
Oh, it was brilliant. It was brilliant.
Yeah. But like, for example, if when a PG-13 Disney movie gets their one swear word, they make it count. And then you go to R and you're like, let's just throw them all. I mean, it does. Constraints add value.
Mm. A guy called in last night and said, Bart, your show's fucking awesome. I had to dump him. I had to get him off the phone.
That should go in a promo. Why are you dumping him?
No. Then I bitched for like 5 minutes about McAfee can do whatever he want and then be like, I'm just the victim shit with him. I can't fucking handle it. He's constantly putting himself in situations where he's going to get criticized and then criticizes the critices. And then, you know, real time with Bill Maher. Oh, no, I watch that show sometimes.
No. I think I know what you're going to bring up. I'm not rolling my eyes at you. Watch what you want. It's free country.
They air it on HBO on Fridays at 9. And then they air it on CNN on Saturdays at 7 with all the fucks right in it.
Really?
But so here I can say bitch, fuck, titties. Bill Maher can swear. McAfee can swear while I'm eating my, you know, leftover ravioli at lunchtime. But if somebody acts it, you know, somebody under their breath said shit on my show. Like, yeah, this kind of shit. I don't understand. We didn't catch it. It was so innocent. And then 3 weeks later, we got an email. There is a listener that claims they heard shit on the Bart Winkler show. When was it? Where is it? And now we're digging through podcasts for 3 weeks ago. Like, meanwhile, McAfee probably said it 18 times on TV that afternoon. I understand that. I don't want to get it. Like, some people don't want it. And I understand I don't want to just say swear words all the time. And I don't know. I just, it sucks that radio is held to these standards that TV just, they don't care.
So wait, why does ESPN, do they pay fines every time or what's the
No, they're on cable and the cable rules have laxed. And even laxed. On NBC now or on like CBS, somebody, I think on a show, Nash Bridges, maybe a long time ago said shit, or Chicago Hope said fuck. Like one time they got to say fuck. They like petition the networks, like, hey, or the, we really, it for the artistic, you know,
yeah,
we need, it was the guy who was on Last Man Standing. It was Tim Allen's boss. He was a doctor on this show.
Ed Elzate, who ran the store. Yeah.
Yeah. He was the one that swore on the CBS show.
Outdoor man. He also played Joe in The Princess Diaries. Just Joe. Who is that guy?
I'm looking up what show that I'm thinking of. So Hector
Elizondo.
Yeah. So he was on a show. Was it Nash Bridges?
No idea.
Well, I need to know now.
He's 88.
He's 88.
He's 88.
Whoa.
Wow. Good for him.
Oh, yeah. He was on the, Chicago Hope.
Hmm.
Chicago Hope. All right. And then to get back to the Woodruff thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question. Does Brandon Woodruff, this is your question. Does Brandon Woodruff accepting his qualifying offer make it more or less likely that Freddie Peralta's a Brewer this year? That's your question. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are the, where does your mind take you? Your mind takes you into, well, what is the Brewers' goal? What is the Brewers' goal? Because if your goal is, we got Woodruff, we got Peralta, let's try to win. Is that the goal? Or is the goal, we got Woodruff, he can anchor. Freddie's a guy that has value, contract's low. We've been doing this. We're trading Hader, we're trading Williams. We're trading guys when they still have value so that we get something for them to keep our team sustainable. Are they in the window right now where Freddie and Woodruff and Churio and Yelich, like this is the team you think can do it?
Yelich.
Or are you waiting for Made and some of these other guys now where mm-hmm. it's like, okay, the window is coming, So let's be the strongest for that window. Or is none of that relevant? Because as evidenced by the 2025 season, they are never going to go all in. Cool. And you don't need to trade your farm system to be all in. But they're never going to go, like, what did they go this year? They didn't even go, like, I want to say 100, I want to say 90%, I want to say 80. They didn't really do anything. They traded for Brandon Lockridge, which was not a trade, it was to get rid of Cortez. And they got some relievers. Okay. Miller and Montgomery, who did one hit on Bally Sports or whatever it's called.
One guy got hurt, and the other guy was hurt.
So I don't know that you can answer this question normally, because I don't know what the Brewers are functioning as. We criticize it, you know, summer of fun and entertainment or passion, mm-hmm. the bites of the apple thing. That is still the mentality, though. They don't want to be a 75-win team.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford a bad September gate. But they don't want to be the team. Like, they can't afford the team where nobody gives a shit to go see them for 2 months.
Yeah.
But they also can't afford, on the other side, pushing all their chips in. Because a World Series win for the Brewers, if they go all in, I always say that gives you a lifetime of endless money. It's a money tree. But if you go all in, there's going to be years of a rebuild, and I don't think the Brewers think they can financially survive that. So what is the question? What is the answer?
You're going too big with this. This is just a matter of how does Matt Arnold build a team? And he looks at Freddie Peralta and is like, I don't want to lose that asset for nothing. Like, that's how he views it. Whether or not he feels pressure from top, I don't even think it's organizational. I think it's Matt Arnold in the way that he views it.
So and he's Paul Imig.
Yeah.
Yes. You can't just have an asset and let it expire.
No. Correct.
Even though you get something.
Even though, like, this Freddie Peralta deal,
and
by
it
the
plays
way,
for you.
It's $8 million for 1 year of a guy who was a Cy Young finalist and won almost 20 games. Like, that's
Did you crack yet?
I did. Freddie Peralta at $8 million for this year is a hell of a value. And
yes.
He's going to fetch another Joey Ortiz or Caleb Durbin in a deal. He's not going to get you any elite prospects. You didn't get any elite prospects from Williams or Burns. Why would you get shit for Freddie Peralta, who's not as good as either of them? It's only 1 year. So, I would just keep him, but I don't think that's how Matt Arnold thinks. And I don't think it's because he feels pressure from ownership. Hey, that $8 million has got to come off the payroll. I just think it's because he's Paul Imig, and that's how he views his task as a team builder, asset management.
Yeah, that's what I was going to change, like asset management. And if you get, you're right, you're going to get less for Peralta than you did for Burns. Like, Peralta's very good. Burns was better. But they were in similar situations. I don't think Peralta, as a free agent next offseason, will get Burns money, though. Do we agree on that? Peralta will not get that.
No.
Which also probably means, again, he's worth less as a trade, or actually arguably worth more, because then you're not on the hook for $200 million as the acquiring team. I don't know. When I say on the hook, I mean, like, if you're like, hey, I want this guy to be more than a one-year rental. You don't know. Like, when the Burns trade happened, I was like, oh, like, remember the Orioles had just gotten a new owner? And this was, like, going to be, like, the new owner splash, like the Matt Ishbia thing with the Suns. And, you know, like, Ortiz was a top prospect. Like, the package was good.
Yeah.
I mean, at the time. I mean, rewind. Not before Ortiz was a 550 OPS.
I was thoroughly underwhelmed. I loved the trade because they were getting rid of him, just like I loved the Devin Williams trade. I hated the trade because of what they got back.
You were happy they got rid of Burns, but not happy with the return? Is that what you said?
I was thrilled that they got rid of him. I would have drove him to Mitchell. I would have drove him to the airport with a smile on my face.
Why?
Because I was done. I wanted off the ride. I normally do. Yes. It's very rare where a Brewer leave. Why do you think Paul, let me ask you this. Why do you think everyone loves Willy Adames so much when he came back? Oh, he's beloved, standing ovation. It's because he's the only Brewer in recent memory who's ever left, and we're like, damn, I'm actually sorry to see that guy go.
I'll agree and disagree, but he also separated himself because he was a very smiley, friendly,
sure,
relatable guy.
Burns was not.
And I think, I do think it's harder with pitchers when you see them every fifth, sixth day, you know, like I think there's something to the visibility of a position player in baseball. But Willy Adames was a unique case just because he was
only able to hit home runs that were solo shots.
You were such a dick about that. I don't know. I'm not saying you're wrong.
When they were down or up 7-1.
But I think Willy Adames was unique in that regard. He was a very easy to root for guy. Now, if you could go back and you'd say, hey,
great to have on your fantasy team, but I don't know if I want him on my actual club.
Well, he got $200 million, right? Adames did?
Yeah, good investment.
I mean, okay. So there's for those just listening, there was a nonverbal there from Bart.
They heard
182.
They heard my eye roll. My eye roll makes a noise. I edit it post script. It goes,
Tim does that, or you do that?
Other people that have accepted the 1 year, $22 million qualifying offer include Shota Imanaga, Gleyber Torres, and Trent Grisham.
I don't think the Cubs they didn't offer Shota this time around, though, did they? Or did they?
Jeff Passan. Did you know he can impersonate Elmo? Jeff Passan is a reporter. Yeah, Trent Grisham. Not enough people remember when he was Trent Clark, and not enough people remember when he cost us a game.
Oh, I remember both things. I interviewed Trent Clark back in the day.
Another player I was happy to see go. Just add another. That's a long list. Add him to it.
A long list. So you have a long list of good riddance Brewers, huh?
Most of them. Just about everyone that's ever left. Yeah.
Yeah, but I find that interesting, right? Because
least favorite Brewer ever, Brady Clark.
Wait, who is the Brewer that you had a feud with?
Brett Anderson,
Chris Davis, or Brett Anderson?
No, the fan had Chris Davis as
Matt Garza.
Garza, where you guys went back and forth, right?
He just DM'd me once,
but he was basically like,
"Keep my name out of your mouth. You're not a real fan."
Yeah, Garza. Grant, the thing I think is interesting about baseball and the idea of like good riddance, I'll drive you to the airport myself. And I'm with you on that. Like if you really watch 140, let's say of 162 games, and your best hitter gets out 7 out of 10 times.
Or worse in Yelich's case, yeah.
Sure. Then you're going to burn out on these guys.
Correct.
Right. Like, because it's such a sport of failure. And then you're like, oh, the next night. I mean, it's the only sport where you could have a situation, Grant, like what you were tweeting during the playoff run of like said Christian Yelich on his 17th consecutive day of having a bad day at the plate.
Yeah.
Bart is now shirtless.
This hot stove talk has me heated up.
Oh, I see what you did there.
This hot stove talk has me. I'm scorching.
There can
I'm
be more.
So warmed up.
There can be more than one Bert/Bart with the shirt off thing, huh?
Should I steal his bit?
What is his bit exactly? I mean, I think you're doing half of it.
I'm not showing nip though.
I don't want you to get, you know, on.
All right, can I talk about Giannis?
We should. I mean, this was. Let me ask you one other question because I had a. Let me ask you one more quick Brewers question because I've had it on the list and was going to wait for the right time, and this feels like the right time because of it. Ricky Weeks
and his new air conditioner
and his new role, right? Ricky Weeks has a new role. This is what I wanted to ask you when it first happened. This new role for Ricky Weeks doesn't change the fact that Ricky Weeks is still the next Brewers manager. Mm-hmm. Or mm-mm.
He will not be the next Brewers manager, if that's what you're
saying. So you're saying this ends that?
I don't know that that was ever.
The old council role?
That's what I say. Is this not like the council role?
Yeah, but this guy's already been in the. You don't take a guy there and then put him out and then put him back in.
Why? Don't you want him to see more?
Although a lot of these guys that have been like a Torrey Hunter or, you know, even this guy that got hired by the Angels, a lot of these guys' jobs are special assistant to GM, the GM.
Sure.
Who just got hired in Texas?
I don't
even know. Who cares?
No.
But I think a lot of these guys do have
managers.
A lot of those guys do have that job. I don't know. I think the Ricky Weeks being the manager thing is too telegraphed.
Yeah.
But I mean, this isn't a twist at the end of a movie. It can be telegraphed.
Skip Schumacher.
This can be telegraphed and still be like the obvious. So Grant.
So Skip Schumacher, there's an article. Skip Schumacher took the job after getting a year to learn the entire ins and outs of the organization. And maybe that's what that provides.
Like counsel.
Yeah. Which is why I say radio people should start in small markets so you know how things work other than just turning on microphone.
Or in any market at all.
Yeah. I thought people getting their start in Milwaukee was crazy that we just threw these guys on the air. Oh, no, that happens in New York City. Just like, doesn't matter. I was like, I'm going to cut my teeth in Fond du Lac. I lived in La Crosse. You think I applied for jobs to be a sports anchor in Chicago or even like Durham? I was applying to Elmira, New York and Bozeman, Montana.
But if
anyone even take me.
What? Okay. Let's do another. I know we want to talk Giannis, but here's another parallel for you. So like when I was in the music biz and you'd have a band that would break through literally overnight, right? Like Panic at the Disco was a bunch of 18-year-old kids from Las Vegas who, before they even had much more than a single song demo, Pete Wentz heard it and he's like, I'd like to sign you guys. And then the next day they're huge, right? And then you have bands who have been doing it for 10 years and they're like, we're kind of still waiting for a break over here. You, Bart, if you could have just gone, this is a genuine question. Would you rather have the 10-year band/radio guy grind? If you could choose, you get it handed to you either way. You get the grind of 10 years of, you know, grinding in a small market or as a band playing small little small little tours, or you are the host at a early age of a big show in a big market, and here you go. Which one are you choosing, honestly?
I think one of life's greatest joys is looking back fondly at a situation you wanted out of desperately.
I'm with you.
And I look back fondly at my time doing music radio. I look back fondly at my time as a TV reporter. I even look back fondly at my time, you know, producing for Chuck and Wicked, but I didn't want to be doing any of those things at the time. And I wanted out and bigger, but I'm glad I have those.
Yes.
But also, this job that I have now, no one really even cares about. I got somebody asking me the other day, are you on the radio in Milwaukee? I got somebody asking me the other day something even worse. I wish you would start a podcast.
Oh, no.
I was like, oh, fuck.
If only you could market. But I like what you said. I agree with what you said. But you still would have skipped all the steps, yes?
I think, yeah, if I was 23 and you gave that to me, I would take it.
Yes, of course. So the memories of it are fond and pleasant, but if you have been offered to skip all the steps.
You also don't know what you don't know what you're missing.
For sure.
You don't know what you're learning. Mm-hmm. But what does it even matter? Like,
it what doesn't in 2025.
I don't think
what is the meaning of life? Well, you learn all this stuff. Well, then what do you do with all that information? You just die. And then you impart it onto others. And what are they going to do with it? Die?
Life is a series of windows of hating what you're doing and mm-hmm. wanting to do something else until you do the next thing. And then you just look back on the thing you were doing and then you just repeat. And then eventually you're not alive anymore.
I still get mail for the guy who lived in my house 13 years ago. And I just throw it away. But this guy had a life. He had a piano tuning business. He had people over that would learn how to play piano in this home. And the only scant memory of him in this world is when I still get mail for him from insurance companies or, you know, Greenfield Truck and Tire. because they got a 10% sale that they fucking, why don't you just take the price of your car down $2,000 instead of sending all of Milwaukee fucking mailers.
Did this guy, did his house become available because he passed?
Yeah, he died here. He died. And then they flipped my house.
Physically inside your house it happened?
I think so.
And we did a deal because of that?
Did I get a deal? No.
Did you swindle?
Somebody bought it, flipped it.
Oh, good. Oh,
I see.
See, I...
And wait, and do you know the room and the exact location of the event?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Was it down here in the DP area?
The DP area. I'm doing good, Paul.
He'll be back, presumably. I mean, we can't say for sure.
Well, if he's not back, the podcast's never ending because I can't stop it.
Mm-mm.
No,
but
no,
that...
no.
Oh, here we go.
Really easy. So I can talk to him like in Stranger Things.
Oh, my God. You did so all
if
that
I put
the
these
light.
Lights up, I can talk to him. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus. He's actually down here now. Rudy, you want to say hi?
Oh, jeez.
Anyone want to tickle the ivories? Is this that show you do every week?
Oh, boy.
Hey, Matt LaFleur's a shitty coach, I heard. Vince Lombardi won't stop complaining about him up there.
Well, now, is this Hulk Hogan?
Hey, brother.
He's Rudy's never met Hulk Hogan.
All of it. Don't even post this episode. Although, then how would the people know that we are brought to you by Happy Place Hemp? You want to take this, Rudes?
HappyPlaceHemp.com. Get 25% off all of your gummies and seltzers. When I was alive.
See, this guy lived a life and now I'm doing this? This fucking sucks for him. I can't do this anymore. I gotta email his kids and told them what I did. 25% off seltzers, gummies, tinctures. They're trying to take it away from us. Big booze is slipping the coffers of some of these folks. No, no, no. We're going to keep it alive. And we still got plenty of time. So stock up, drink up, gum up. That's not a phrase.
Gum up.
Get all your CBD and THC needs. You got Thanksgiving coming up. I like to get boozed up at Thanksgiving. But Barty's taking a little break. That doesn't mean I ain't going to be high as shit watching Bengals-Ravens at night. How about that? HappyPlaceHemp.com. Promo code is Rudy. Bart.
Jeez.
So how long is Giannis out for?
All right. Can I give you a topic on it, and then you can go into it?
Yeah. So they're trying to drive him out of Milwaukee, though. That's clear.
Okay, here's the question. You might like, well, you're not going to like it, but it's on the same path. Giannis is just difficult to officiate due to his size and strength and speed, and there's nothing more to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. Basically, he's the tush push of the NBA. You just can't officiate him. What are we supposed to do? Can't do it. We can't figure it out. It's too hard. No, Giannis is getting fucked. Giannis is getting fucked, and the Bucks are now getting fucked because of it.
So genuinely, is it, as Doc Rivers said, you know, a week ago, whenever it was this season, and he just said, yeah, it's like he compared it to Shaq, and he said, I get it. It's tough, but also, while he's difficult to officiate, we got to figure this out. We got to do better than this. And he said it, you know, respectfully. He didn't, you know, get fined for the comments or whatever, but are we really to the point where this is – more than just an incredibly difficult to officiate player? Are you buying in on a conspiracy, or is this just for online foolish fun?
I think that Giannis. So are you asking if Adam Silver really gave a directive?
I'm asking if whether you're a game official, not on the take, but just like genuinely, like, is it just hard to officiate Is that all it is? Because like you see things like that offensive foul that kind of has gone viral, the clip of the offensive foul from
where he actually hooked his arm. Bullshit.
Well, I didn't see an angle of that. If someone else did, forget me. I mean, you could think of it as like this conspiracy opportunity for this, but is there more, is there anything more to it? Or is there just a massive human who's also fast? And
yeah, yes, there is more to it. Here's what it is. Sometimes players, teams, whatever, sometimes the officials give them the benefit of the doubt and call more. Think the Chiefs. Sometimes I was in a soccer game once where this team was supposed to kick the shit out of another team. And at halftime, it was tied. And it was crazy. And the other team's like, this is awesome. We have a chance to pull a huge upset. And then the referee in the second half, first 10 minutes, called the worst penalty kick I've ever seen in my life for the team that was supposed to win. So they get their goal. They feel good. They win the game 8-0. And I always thought he was seeing a game where he knew what the outcome was supposed to be.
Sure.
He's not on the take. He's not. He's just, you know, to save me from criticism, if this losing team wins, people are going to be like, what did happen in that game? How was the referee?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I think referees inherently try to avoid being accused of something, so then they go the other way too strongly. Because then Giannis gets too good of a whistle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're trying to do that, or maybe they're like, well, we don't have to officiate this guy. Or sometimes it is tough when there's a small, like sometimes guys are playing basketball against each other where you can't, like the rules weren't intended for this, you know. It's like trying to call a strike zone on a guy who's 15 feet tall. What are you gonna do then? The rules aren't intended for that. I think in the case of Giannis, and I don't know why people pick who they pick. Sometimes people get picked as you're gonna be the one we protect, and sometimes they just don't. And so is there something bigger at play? Is it a Milwaukee thing? I don't know. The other thing on that is I don't know that we can just have this conversation on the up and up. And one of the things that I talk about a lot, and I'm not even saying anything's happening, but every time there's like a gambling story, it doesn't dent our view of the sport. Like we have this NBA in a bubble. And then we hear Jonte Porter's taking over unders. We see that Terry Rozier's in prison. And we're like, okay, everyone else is good. But then we'll find out Chauncey Billups did that. Well, that was, they got them all out now. Some Lakers phones were seized over the weekend. That's that. And then you watch these games and you're just like, oh, this is just. I don't think the NBA right now deserves the benefit of the doubt that they're 100% clean. So I think these conversations also need to have that in the back of our head.
Grant.
I think he is difficult to officiate, and I think defenders should get to beat up on him a bit because he beats up on them. Like, I think there's a reciprocity thing. Shaq was the same way. I'm not, there's no conspiracy, I don't think. If there was one, it would kind of look like this at times, a little bit.
That's a good point.
I also don't think he's that difficult to officiate. People talk about him like he's 20 feet tall. Oh, the NBA has never had a 6'11 physical player before. The league is littered with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, not that difficult to defend. But he gets beat up. And I don't think there's a conspiracy. But when I go on Bucks Twitter and they're all like, yeah, there's a conspiracy. Well, if there was one, this is what it would look like.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's hard to watch. Like, as someone who's deciding, you know, do I spend two and a half hours watching this?
And the new Call of Duty just came out, and it's football season.
Only for, you know, Russell Westbrook to grab Giannis around the neck, and then the pool report, the official saying, like, we just weren't looking in that direction. My struggle with a sport, this is my challenge that thankfully is going away with Major League Baseball. I'll sound like a prick saying it. My time is valuable, right? For myself, I have a lot of things I might want to be doing. If I'm going to watch a baseball game only for an umpire to miss a call that's 8 inches outside to decide a pivotal point of a game, I'm going to be pissed and I'm going to lessen my viewing of that until it's rectified. That's how I handle it for myself. To each their own. An NBA regular season game, I get excited about. I watch for 15 minutes and I'm like, do I want 2 more hours of this? Right? When there's plenty of else to do this time of year with television viewing. So I don't know about the conspiracy stuff, but they don't know how to officiate Giannis, and it makes it hard to watch and want to watch and to get excited to watch. Is it what caused an injury? I mean, indirectly at the very least. No, I mean, the challenges with officiating, I mean, definitely has an impact. And by the way, the biggest problem is that, as the official the other night said to Doc Rivers, if I recall the story correctly, well, Giannis plays through it. If you play through the contact, you don't get the call. That is absurd. And that is not.
That is a rule in soccer.
That's clearly the wrong application advantage. Of the rule.
It's advantage. If you get fouled, but you would lose an advantage if they actually call the foul. Like if you get fouled, but can still break away to the cup, then they're not going to call the foul. But that's not how basketball was created.
It shouldn't be. You should not reward.
Especially in a sport where if you have so many fouls, you get booted.
You're creating an incentivization structure to not play through it.
Which the league does definitely not need.
Right. But that's, if you're going to admit to a head coach of a player who you're challenging to officiate, be like, you know, sorry, but he played through it. And then the next guy flops and that person is more likely to get a good call, favorable call for themselves. You've structured the officiating wrong. So I have to go right now. Here's one I'll leave you with. Bart, maybe talked about last night. Cam Scadaboo should obviously not be getting pushed and shoved at WWE Monday Night Raw while being wheeled into the arena after a devastating injury. I look forward to hearing your thoughts. Bye, guys.
Goodbye, Paul. He shouldn't be there at all. That will be my take. He shouldn't be there at all. Your team sucks, man, and you're hurt.
Did I ever? You probably saw the video. I'll just pull it up and then we'll leave. I put it on YouTube where Giannis almost got injured at AEW.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'll pull it up here.
Tim.
Tim, if you could just, what would have happened?
It's a good question. Cam Scadaboo just had surgery, massive surgery. And your team's losing, man. Like, not that it's his fault. He's not playing, but this generation sometimes.
Here we go. Here's Giannis. Okay, it was when he was getting off.
Ooh. You can hear it in the arena too. Ooh.
I know he gets off the rope and like maybe that's where the groin injury started.
The little banner.
Maybe it's been lingering for 4 years.
Dormant. Yeah.
All right, that's all we got, Paul.
Sorry, Paul.
Mm-hmm. For everybody else, more episodes to come this week. That's my promotion. How could you not know I have a podcast with the level of promotion I put into this?
I just assume everyone has a podcast unless they tell me otherwise. So,
yes, but do they play long form clips of it on their radio show?
No, that's where you separate yourself.
Thank you. And thank you for stopping into the Winklerverse.